This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You need surgery.
Bisexuality.
Bisexual.
I'm bisexual.
Bisexual.
Triple bypass.
Bisexual.
Bisexual.
Bisexuality.
I'm bisexual.
Bisexuality.
The best of both worlds.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass on Joy 94.9.
Hi guys, this is Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. I'm Ruby and I'm joined here by Ella and two members of the band Huntley, Ellie and Andy. Thanks so much for joining
hey.
Us guys.
Hey.
And that very chill track was Fortune's FKWTU, which I'm sure is an abbreviation that I'm not cool enough to know.
Fuck with you tonight.
Perfect. I'm sure that's missing a letter. No, I get it. It's all fine. Oh, it's FK. There's two for... I got it now. I thought that was just... Never mind. Moving on. So Huntley is a Melbourne-based electro band that has been called, I think it was on Triple J Unearthed. They produce Doof You Can Cry To, which is very cool. And also, Ellie, at least I know you happen to be at least attracted to more than one gender. And Andy has been doing a bit of thinking about that over the last few hours as he came on towards this show.
Welcome still.
And Ellie, we've had on the show before when she was doing her project on bisexual men in rural areas. Thank you so much for being here again.
Thank you.
And guys, if you want to join in this conversation, you can message us on 0427JOY949. You can email us at onair@joy.org.au. You can find us on Facebook at Triple Bypass on Joy and on Twitter at Triple Bypass. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. So firstly, I suppose, so you guys have been bringing in the music today. So can you tell us, so Fortunes, so let's get started. So this is a local group.
Yeah, originally they were from New Zealand, but they live in Melbourne now.
Awesome.
And they're lovely people.
How many people make up the group? It's hard to tell when it's electro for me, anyway.
There's just two of them. There's the singer and the producer.
And so, and I think, are they a queer group as well?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I really like about Fortunes, there are probably 1,000 things that I like about Fortunes, but one of them is that having music that is, I mean, it's pop music. It's so, it's very aesthetically pleasing, I find. I could listen over and over and over, and I think it, you know, it's got a lot of play on Triple J, and Connor uses, like, male pronouns mm-hmm. when he sings about lovers, and mm-hmm. That's something that you don't hear very often.
Funny. No, you still really don't, do you? It's always, I think, a big deal when, even when they do, when singers do covers, when they don't change the pronouns.
Yeah.
I think Childish Gambino did a cover on Triple J as well, and he didn't change masculine pronouns. And I was like, oh my God, is he saying he's gay? It's like, no, I think he's just saying it's a good song. He doesn't need to change it.
Yeah.
And if he was. So I suppose, is the music scene in Melbourne, particularly the queer music scene, is that quite... Are there a lot of connections there? Like, do you guys all know each other? Is that... I can say that.
Do we all know each other? It's funny because when I first moved to Melbourne, I felt really isolated and really not involved in any kind of community.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings me a lot of joy... FM.
That's the wrong station.
Joy 949.
You can stay.
It brings me a lot of Joy 949 to think about how I feel involved in the queer music scene, because in certain ways I do, and that's such a refreshing
absolutely
feeling.
But I suppose when... So you identify as queer,
yeah.
and so attraction to more than one gender. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, for me, queerness is both a gender and a sexuality thing, and it's a political thing. It's a part of the way that I see the world. So in terms of my sexuality, queerness, I guess, was a really empowering term for me to that articulated an unwillingness to attach a label onto my attraction
succinctly
to people.
Do you think that may have had an effect on feeling connected with community? Did you find the community in Melbourne was quite binary, for example? So, you know, with gay, lesbian, and trans areas, was that a part of it, or was it the lack of having labels that made it a bit difficult?
I think when I moved to Melbourne, I've never really been involved in anything but the queer scene in terms of like LGBTQIA plus. I've felt the most kind of involved in the queer scene, mm-hmm. as opposed to like I really don't know much about the like the gay and lesbian events, and the I often find that there are, you know, club nights and all sorts of events that I have no idea about, that are more kind of, you know, monosexual, whether they're like lesbian nights or gay nights and etc.
Yeah, well, if that's not what you consider yourself to be, it doesn't really make sense for you to go, I suppose. Or and Andy, so I think this has been something that you have been kind of discovering or considering a little more. Is that right, as far as your own sexuality, if you identify as queer?
Yeah, no, I've definitely thought about it for a long time. My hesitations around it have been more about, like, openly taking up space in a marginalised community when I have not experienced. Like, I grew up with a lot of hetero and male and white privilege, and like, yeah, just a hesitation to like claim labels and take up space that like there are people who are like actually suffering for. Important to like, you know, bring these like labels to light, like not labels, these people and these things and these experiences like to light and give them space, but I'm not always sure that I'm necessarily the right person to do that.
I think that's something that we think a lot about as a band.
Yeah.
As three people who have an incredible amount of privilege, mm-hmm. like we have a lot of discussions about, yeah, negotiating, you know, power and privilege and, you know, when it is our right to claim labels or to claim spaces that have been, you know, desperately fought for by people who face more structural oppression than we could ever manage. And then we have conversations on the other end about like when it is our responsibility to do so and to, you know, have these conversations and, you know, bring up certain topics. But I guess it is a tricky line to walk, yeah, as to when it is your space to even have a voice on and when it is your responsibility to, you know, speak up. And I guess we all feel pretty passionately about, you know, using our privilege and using, you know, our music as a platform. And so for when that is in terms of other marginalized groups, we feel pretty passionately about creating platforms.
I think it's interesting to talk about this idea of heterosexual privilege, because that is something that is mentioned with bisexual people who do use that label a lot, in that we have heterosexual privilege. Well, heterosexual privilege itself is the assumption which everyone has is that everyone is straight. Mm. And given that sexuality is one of the least visible of the privileges, it tends to be that everyone is coded straight until they say otherwise. So I suppose in that way it's also interesting to look at how by letting people assume, it's not so much taking up space as well, but not letting yourself be one of the voices saying that things need to change. So it's that kind of interesting balance, because, of course, I think it is always important to remember that, you know, a lot of us, when you're straight passing, I suppose, is what the way they say it, there's a particular kind of privilege that comes with that, but that privilege is also having a part of you
erased
and not identified. Well, we're going to be heading off to a song quite soon. So if you are enjoying this discussion and do want to get involved again, the text line is 0427569949, and you can email us at onair@joy.org.au. This is Triple Bypass and you're on Joy.
Keep us on air. Become a member today. 1-300-JOY-949.
Joy 94.9 would like to thank you for supporting our podcast service. In July 2017 alone, our community downloaded over 77,000 Joy podcast episodes, our most yet. If you haven't already, now is the perfect time to search for your favourite Joy program on iTunes and to subscribe to them so you never miss an episode. Victoria Police LGBTIA Liaison Officer Gabby teams up with the Joy co-host Dee to speak to Detective Sergeant Chris Hamilton about recruitment at the police and how the community can apply to work within the organisation on the Vic Police GLL Glow Show. making their podcast debut, Robert and Mossy bring you music from the 50s through to the 70s on Yesterday Once More. Missed the LGBT news that was over the past week? Listen to our news wrap thanks to the team at QNN. And over at Checkpoint, Luke and Jimmy chat with Jason Michael Paul, the creator and producer of The Legend of Zelda Symphony of the Goddess, taking place soon at Hamer Hall in Melbourne. Joy podcasts where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and on iTunes.
This is Margaret Cho, and you're tuned in to Joy 94.9 and listening via the Joy app.
Or you could be listening live. We don't know. This is Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9, and that was Kandre with Baby Goy, which is G-O-Y. We are joined in the studio today by Ellie and Andy from the Melbourne band Huntley, and Ella, who's joined us after visiting a few weeks ago to talk about bisexual men in rural areas. Mm-hmm. So we have been discussing particularly queer spaces in Melbourne, particularly in regards to spaces that are queer versus gay and lesbian, and which ones feel more comfortable for some of the members here today, and also just the term queer and what that means for a lot of different people, and particularly what it means to Ellie. And we've also been discussing privilege and the history that it carries with it, particularly in when it comes to taking up space and having your voice heard. Now, during that break, we did have a few messages in. We have one question for Ellie. What do you see as the number one social political issue in Australia right now? From Michelle in Melbourne, right off the bat, heavy question. Thanks, Michelle. Thank you for listening.
I think we could not have a conversation about politics and power and privilege in Australia without centering First Nations people, and I think the ongoing myriad ways that colonization has enforced a level of resilience upon Indigenous people that, you know, would never be expected of anyone else. And, yeah, I mean, right now I think something that's present in a lot of people's mind is the recent court decision for the man who killed Elijah Doherty to not be charged with manslaughter.
3 years, including time served already.
Yeah. You know, for an Aboriginal boy. And I think that is weighing really, really heavy on a lot of people I know, including, you know, including settlers and white people. But, you know, I don't think we can imagine how much the pain... Yeah,
it's difficult
pain.
To imagine, isn't it, to imagine that a young person's life and all their potential and everything they could be and could have been is reduced to a very, very small sentence.
Yeah, I think, you know, it goes broader than, like, these, you know, immediate kind of personal, you know, decisions and one life lost and out to... You know, there is a structural, systematic and endemic lack of value placed on Aboriginal lives.
Absolutely. And I think on that track, and that is a disservice to everybody in the country, because when you do allow or when you insist on a structure which values some lives over others and some lives less than, everybody is hurt by that. Because this idea that we are in some way, we have to, like, and of course, none of us are in the way that First Nation people are, but we actually have just followed the show Urban Dreaming, which does play on Tuesdays every live at 8 o'clock. So it's definitely worth checking out. This is an issue they've also been talking about a lot. And I know that there was quite a large protest on Friday last week, which had an incredible, incredible turnout, which was fantastic, really.
But which ended in, you know, like services coming along and... hosing down the fire that was the smoking ceremony that was happening in the intersection there, and of course the services came and just like blasted it out, which I think is a excellent representation of like the Australian government and protective services.
There was a protest for him I think earlier this year as well, and there was only about 200 people there, including a lot of children. And when that protest reached Flinders Street, there were probably more police than people who had actually marched in the protest, including a lot of mounted cops, and people in full riot gear.
Yeah,
because children are that big threat.
But because at the minute a protest becomes about racial issues, particularly the issues of black people and Indigenous people, it is coded as violent.
Yeah.
And coded as immediate guilt as well, in terms of, you know, this man who murdered... Elijah, he's afforded moral complexity. Mm-hmm. He's afforded, he was dangerously driving, not trying to hurt someone.
Benefit of the doubt. Who gets the benefit of the doubt in any situation? Yeah. This is your question, Michelle. And the next message we got in was from London. And who'd like to ask Ellen? Now, this is only, of course, you do have the right to not answer this question because it is a bit personal, but reasons why you think queer people are suffering from high levels of poor mental health, if you've ever experienced poor mental health, and coping strategies that you can recommend.
Okay. First part of the question, why do queer people suffer poor mental health rates? I think it's really important when having discussions around LGBTQIA plus people and mental health issues to not pathologize and connect anything inherent about, you know, non-cis, non-hetero as that having something inherently, you know, harmful or dangerous or, you know, pathologizing. I'm just having a lifeline handed to me. So, yeah, while we're talking about mental health issues, it is really important to remember that you can call Lifeline if you are seeking support on 131114. So that's 13, 11, 14. And if your life is in danger, you can call 000. I would also add that in Australia, at least, you can call the CAT mental health team, and you can Google the capital CAT mental health team, and they will be really supportive in guiding people who are suicidal. Why do queer people have poorer mental health? I think we always have to think about the context, the power structures under which people live, and think about and start thinking about mental health as, you know, socio-political, the ties that mental health has to socio-political context, and turn the onus away from the people experiencing mental health and mental illness, rather, so that the onus is not on them, and that there's something inherently, you know, bad or dangerous about, you know, being non-cis or non-straight or not white.
Yeah, it's like queer people having higher rates of mental health problems and stuff. You know, queer people aren't an inconvenience, right? As they're often, it's spoken about as like a headline, like, here we are again, you know, LGBTQIA, mental health, you know, what are we going to do about it? That sort of thing. It's branded as like an inconvenience.
Yes.
And like you said, linked directly to
pathology.
Exactly. It's like, no, the structural side of it is the problem.
And often, you know, this is talked about then in, you know, with really well-intentioned interventions and projects and programs, but they come in with a really kind of protectionist approach about, you know, protecting rather than, you know, empowering. I think that's an important consideration. And just on that, recently the Herald Sun published like a front page, this huge full page spread that was like how our
Daily Telegraph. I may have been written a few quite angry messages about that.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
From some of us in the room.
Yeah. I think there were, more than... that was a pretty distressing...
Yeah. So it was an article that was apparently about youth obesity, but when they were doing an info diagram about the things that young people are doing themselves, which are affecting their mental health in bad ways and why it's all their fault, they included drug usage, drinking...
Mm.
People who lived in New South Wales.
And it's funny how statistics work, isn't it?
And people who are same-sex attracted. Now, I saw the positive in that 16% of young people consider themselves to be same-sex attracted nowadays, which is a lot more than the 1% we're often referred to.
Yeah.
If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can message us on 0427 569 949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au. You can also find us on Twitter at Triple Bypass and on Facebook. Now, again, so if you do want to talk about any of the issues that have come up for you today, the Suicide Helpline in Victoria is 1300 651 251. We'll be right back after these short messages. You listen to Triple Bypass and this is Joy 94.9.
We'll be right back. Hey there, I'm Adam Lambert, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
That's right, this is Joy 94.9, and you're tuned in to Triple Bypass, here to put the B in LGBTI. That was Gary Yon by their song Ghost, another Australian queer band. We've been playing a few of those tonight, which is awesome. We are joined in the studio tonight by Ellie and Andy and Ella. I had to separate them with another name just because it's a little confusing for me. I'm Ruby, here as your host tonight. We have been talking about a number of things. Particularly, we started off talking about music. We've ended up talking a lot about mental health, particularly in queer spaces. And we've also been talking about issues that are facing social political issues as well as queer issues, which have mostly been talking about the First Nation Australians. And now I think one of the things, we had a few messages during just during that break. Another one's just come in now. So, but one of the things that Ellie was talking about was her her thoughts on why queer people do suffer from high levels of poor mental health. Now, we didn't get to finish that question before we went to that wonderful song, but the other second half was asking if you have ever experienced poor mental health and if that is in some way correlated to your identifying as a queer person.
I have suffered from poor mental health quite regularly. I feel like I lead a relatively unstable life in regards to my mental health, but one that I put a lot of work into, trying to work through. And I think it's important to talk about that stuff and destigmatize it, but also recognize that, you know, the capacity to talk about it and, you know, talk about getting a mental health care plan and going to see a therapist and all of this stuff is, you know, also speaks volumes to my access to privilege and financial resources that a lot of people don't have. But just to answer the last part of the question, which was about self-care and strategies.
Yeah, what young queer people can do if they do feel that they are dealing with mental health issues? You've got a bit of background in this,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah. I am a therapist and I'm a music therapist, and obviously I think there's a lot of benefits from participating in, you know, creativity. But also I think it's really important to find community, to access support services where they're available, to reach out and ask for help. But also, you know, remember that you're part of a global context that, you know, may have put you in a position where, you know, depression or anxiety or, you know, all the, like, broad spectrum of poor mental health, you know, isn't about something fundamentally wrong with you. But
which is a really important thing to remember, I think. It is interesting bringing that up, as one of the things that have been talked about on this show a few times is that bisexual people, or people who identify as being attracted to more than one gender, in every country that has done studies in this have been shown to have poorer mental health by a pretty significant margin than people who identify as gay, lesbian and straight. And I think a lot of that does come down to community and to the visibility that you've been talking about.
Yeah.
So at the beginning of the show, you had mentioned that, you know, you struggled a bit when you moved to Melbourne finding a queer space or feeling connected to the community, the LGBTI community, as opposed to the queer community. So do you think that as far as being attracted to more than one gender, is it easier to find space in a queer community than in a gay and lesbian community?
I think for me, in regards to, like, my, worldview, it is. And I think the thing about bisexuality and queerness and thinking about, you know, being attracted to more than one gender, because it acknowledges that there are
multiple
genders and
plethora.
And I think that's hard because it comes up against, you know, binaries and fixed identities.
A lot of the foundations of our society. Especially in a colonist country.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, the whole kind of Western world relies on binaries and, you know, fixed understandings of things, and to have that challenged, I think really, like, unsettles things, and it unsettles people, I guess.
Absolutely.
And that's probably what a lot of, like, bisexual folks mm. can relate to, with people, you know, being quite challenged by, you know, someone not adhering to a one or the other.
Yeah, and I definitely think that's some of the, that speaks volumes to some of the internal conflict that a lot of queer and bisexual totally. People have, is that expectation. If they don't have access, you know, if they don't live in Melbourne, if they live out in the country somewhere, or like I did growing up, kind of edge of country, you only knew about gay people. Mm-hmm. And that's a common experience for a lot of people, but even just the proximity that you have to mm-hmm. a diversity of queer people mm-hmm. has a great effect. Yeah. And, you know, when you absorb that internal conflict of monosexism, I think that definitely, you know, when you don't have a visible community to explain what you're feeling, that's where I think a lot of, like, that's the social location that bisexual people and queer people are in.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
As well, one of the things that we were talking about earlier as well, Andy, you were saying that while you've been kind of thinking about your own sexuality and your own gender identity and the queerness of yourself, I suppose, way to put it, and your kind of reluctance to take up space, I feel that that's a common issue with people who are bisexual as well, not being gay enough to be allowed or to be worthy or to have to feel that it's okay for them to sit at the table, because we do spend time with partners who may appear to be of the opposite gender, which means that we may experience or are less likely to experience street harassment, for example. Is that something that, as you've kind of considered, do you feel comfortable now with thinking of yourself as queer, or is it still something that you just don't feel is important to be like a label, I suppose, on yourself?
I feel pretty comfortable thinking of myself that way. The outward label, for reasons I discussed before, still similarly, but like totally agree that creating a space where you can still talk about the feelings and the issues that you experience through your identity, like whether it like
yeah
like these yeah
absolutely
how marginalized you are is like very hard to quantify.
Absolutely. Like, well, I think, you know, I know that you could probably do, at least I'm sure BuzzFeed has done a survey, but they do that with everybody. Mm-hmm. We actually did receive an email during that break, which is another question for Huntley, guys. If there is nothing given, it can never be returned, what kind of healing have you seen or experienced in your performances as Huntley?
Oh my god.
From Mission _ Tell.
Okay, what healing have we experienced?
Or seen.
Massive. Like, for me, I mean, you know, like, me and this person sitting next to me, we've, like, undergone, like, pretty huge, like, ups and downs. And, I was sitting outside the Brisbane airport the other day, and having a total meltdown, a public meltdown, which is also my Instagram handle.
And DJ name.
And solo artistry name. Anyway, I was having a public meltdown, true to my name, and I was like, I don't want to come back to Melbourne. I'm totally losing it. I'm in a really bad place. And I messaged Andy, and, his responses just really grounded me, and I find that when you make music with someone, like, you can create some pretty
profound
and intense connections.
I was just like, there was a very profound look on your face was what I suggested that word.
I mean, it's complex. It's complex as hell.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, engaging creatively, you have to engage very emotionally as well, and that's going to spill outside of just whether the other person likes the chord or the drum beat that you're playing, and it's going to spill across into all emotional layers of your life. So, which becomes like a really rewarding but also very hard sometimes and intense thing to navigate. And I think also because, and then seeing that, more and more, I think we've been seeing that sometimes at shows and like mostly through our friends, but like people responding to the emotion that we put out with their own emotions.
Well, the music has been titled, as I've mentioned before, as Doof That Makes You Cry.
Doof You Can Cry To.
Doof You Can Cry To. So that does kind of suggest that there is a lot of emotion within the music, and that's something that you're aiming for when you put this out. Like, not maybe to make people cry, though. That's always
More people should cry. People should cry as much as I do. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, when I write, everything that I write, like, my lyrics are not random, you know, they're not things that I'm kind of like just picking out of nowhere. They're like deeply tied to the, you know, intense thoughts and feelings and experiences that I'm having. So when, for example, you know, I might like bring a song and play it to Andy and Charlie, you know, sometimes they can pick straight away what it's about, and it's about a really like intense thing that I'm going through. Yeah, so it's a huge place of healing, you know, within the music and outside of it.
Well, we're going to try and play one of your songs after this short break. Guys, we'll be right back after these messages and a song from Huntley. You're listening to Triple Bypass. This is Joy 94.9.
Could I spend every day rolling high with this girl? I could die with this girl. We'd fall deep down into any kind of bed. We probably wouldn't need one. These two hands drive their way through smoke's rolling over. And somehow it's not mortality anymore. I'm living too hard with the girl that I adore. We're each other's precious metals. It's burning up my heart. It's safe to close my eyes, blow them open when we part. Need one.
We're Tegan and Sarah, and Australia's only LGBTI radio station needs your support. Sign up as a member now. Head to joy.org.au.
That's right. You can join and help support the radio station that's here to support the community on joy.org.au. You can also find us, and that's Triple Bypass. We're here to put the B in LGBT and I and A as well. I'm Ruby, and I'm joined here by Andy, Ellie, and Ella. Ellie and Andy are from the band Huntley, whose song Tempelhof we just played. Did I say that right?
You did.
Yes. And Ella is here to join with her excellent commentary coming back from her current studies on bisexual men in rural areas.
Yes, that's correct.
We have been going all over with some very, very interesting topics tonight. We've been talking about privilege. We've been talking about queer music spaces, about queer versus LGBTI, or not versus, but the differences and finding community and finding spaces when you're maybe in a, when you're attracted to more than one gender, and the issues with binaries and the restrictions they place on us, and that the effects that any of those restrictions can have on our mental health. So, but we have did get a message during that break from Jade, who's our favourite listener. I didn't say that out loud. I may have done that. She said, I don't think anyone has to apologise having privilege if they are using that privilege to help those without it. Thanks, Jade. This is an interesting topic because we've all been, we have discussed that in this room there is a lot of privilege. Mm. We're on, firstly, you know, we're on radio. We have, that's a pretty big voice to have. Mm. We're all white.
There's a lot of whiteness in this room.
A lot of whiteness in this room. And I suppose those are two things that come with, and we're all of an economic status where we can afford to come into the city and to come on the station, and we can take time for ourselves and to make, and as well. But going back, so I'm not sure, what do you think about that particular statement? I'll put that out to the guests.
Yeah, I think it's really important to, like, acknowledge whiteness, to see it, because it's a massive problem when race is only seen as any, when race is only seen as anything other than white, and when it's only people of colour who are racialised. And if I may just now plug a podcast that I have been listening to. The podcast is called Scene on Radio. That's S-C-E-N-E, Scene on Radio. And the series is called Seeing White, and it's incredible. I think some really valuable learning for everyone, mainly white people, and it's about, you know, contextualizing how race has been constructed.
I think there was an interesting example of a misunderstanding, like, or a big blunder in the idea of, again, white being the default, much like, you know, whiteness is seen as a default, heterosexuality is seen as a default, and masculinity is seen as a default for a lot of positions as well. This was for a recent a write-up about the new advertisement for the Pride Centre in St Kilda, because they are now incorporating a black and a brown stripe into their flag on their advertising material. And someone referred to in that article of saying, you know, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and non-Anglos. So grouping, that's a lot of, that's, you know, that's a, Anglo-Saxons are actually not the majority in the world.
Not
and there
at
are a
all.
Lot of other ethnic and different groups from a lot of different countries. And a lot of that in Australia as well. So that was something that was picked up on by quite a few of my friends and myself as being, again, something that obviously was people who had the right intentions, but did not understand that by doing that, they were actually grouping everybody and erasing any differences between them as just saying that, well, there's white people and then there's the not white people.
And it's done as like an afterthought. It's telling.
To be defined by what you're not as opposed to what you are is never a positive place to be in for people. So,
and I think, like, I mean, I did kind of drop into the comments, unfortunately, a little bit just to, 'cause
Never go in the comments.
I had to. And it really, like, reminded me how much of a problem racism is in queer community and LGBTQIA community. Nearly every single comment I saw on that post was some sort of I don't see colour, some sort of variation of that, some sort of this is meant to be pride, this isn't colour doesn't come into it, but clearly it does.
It's a rainbow flag.
Yeah. I mean, like, if also pride was started by queer people.
Yeah, it absolutely was. Also
and fought for.
The mother of pride was a bisexual person, which is interesting given that, again, in a similar way that erasure happens in the LGBTI community, there is erasure of non-white people. So anyone who does not fit into what you know, the public perception of queer, which is at the moment still kind of Will and Gracie. Mm.
And that conversation was being dominated by hurt white feelings and, you know, a really, like we talked about histories and histories that are embedded in spaces, and there's just like a huge amount of erasure, like an active erasure of the history of queer space, and that history is colour. Like it's,
and that,
you know.
And that's all that also comes into music. Mm. So a lot of the music that we kind of see as mainstream, so disco and house music, as we've had on the show before when we spoke with Rog, who Ellie actually knows.
And Andy, yes.
And Andy knows, that's right. So a lot of that music came from queer spaces, from Latino and African-American people particularly in certain areas. But things like disco and house music had very queer origins. And now the face of those for a lot of people would be Skrillex, for example. And I am pulling a face. You can't see it because we're on radio, but I'm pulling a face because he doesn't know how to care for his hair, and it makes me sad. If you're going to grow it that long, take care of it. But also, Andy also has long hair and he takes care of it, and it's great.
And has a lot to say about dance music and politics.
Well, I'd love to hear that, because I don't think most people would think of dance music as being political. I think when people think of political music, they think of anthems, like, you know, AB Originals, January 26, for example. Mm. So how is dance music political?
House music came out of disco music, which was people of colour, like, largely playing that kind of music. And, yeah, and then a queer scene, like, was a massive thing in the birth of dance culture and, like, gay clubs and, like, all queer clubs. The song the song that I'll play next actually explains it much better than I would ever be able to whenever we get to that point. We've still got 2 minutes. Now I've got to talk for 2 minutes.
Well, I can ask you some more questions. So I actually have heard Rog mention this on one of the other shows, which, by the way, guys, if you do want to listen to any of the shows we've mentioned, you can check them out on our podcasts, which you can find on iTunes at joy.org.au/dribblebypass. So one of the things he was mentioning was that the Disco Sucks movement, which came about, was actually in direct retaliation against the queerness of disco.
And the colour.
Yeah, it was the idea of, like, sucks, as in, so fellatio. So it was actually a put down of particularly the men they saw as being gay, because, again, the groups being put onto this did not have particularly nuanced ideas of non-heterosexualities. Mm-hmm. So I suppose, what do you think as far as dance music now being political?
Well, a lot of the political nature of a lot of it has been, like, ripped out of it. And people go to it just to feel good, and they don't think about how much fighting people had to do to, like, make this music as popular as it is. The only reason that so many people have heard it is because of so many people who've really struggled to have it themselves heard, and the way that they were heard was through this music. For it now to be, like, completely depoliticized is pretty abysmal, and something that, like, needs to be rectified.
Mm. Well, we're going to hear a song, I think, that might kind of explain that quite well. Taking a few steps to rectify. This has been... we'd like to thank you, our guests, so Andy, Ellie and Ella, for coming on the show tonight.
Thanks so much. Thanks to everyone for listening and writing in. That's such a thrill.
That was Annie and Ellie from Huntley, a Melbourne band, and Ella, who is just generally fantastic and studying bisexual men in rural areas.
Thank you.
This has been Triple Bypass. We're here to put the B in LGBTI, and you're on Joy 94.9. Coming up, we're going to be heading off with this song, which is...
It's by DJ Sprinkles, called Midtown 120 Intro.
This has been Joy 94.9.
There must be 100 records with voiceovers asking, what is house? The answer is always some greeting card bullshit about life, love, happiness. The House Nation likes to pretend clubs are an oasis from suffering, but suffering isn't here with us. If you can get in, that is. I think of one time in New York when they wouldn't let me into the loft, and I could hear they were actually playing one of my records on the dance floor at that very moment. So let's keep sight of the things you're trying to momentarily escape from. After all, it's that larger context that created the house movement and brought you here. House is not universal. House is hyper specific. East Jersey, Loisaida, West Village, Brooklyn. Places that conjure specific beats and sounds. As for the sounds of New York dance floors themselves, today's house classics might have gotten worked into a set once in a while, but the majority of music at every club was major label vocal shit.
I don't care what anybody tells you.
Besides, New York deep house may have started out as minimal mid-tempo instrumentals, but when distributors began demanding easy-selling vocal tracks, even the label Strictly Rhythm betrayed the promise of its own name by churning out Strictly Vocal after Strictly Vocal.
Most Europeans still think deep house means shitty high-energy vocal house.
So what was the New York?
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.